Today is Wednesday, January 10th, 2007, and you're listening to Brian Madden Live. Today's show continues a series of interviews that I recorded from Citrix's Fort Lauderdale headquarters a few weeks ago. I'm pleased to welcome Citrix's CEO, Mark Templeton. In today's conversation, Mark discusses the course of the company, its relationship with Microsoft, and how the people and the community have affected the evolution of Citrix. We'll also talk about some cool future technologies that Citrix is working on, and we'll try to nail down just how many servers Mark has in his basement. All right, so I'm sitting down now with Citrix's CEO, Mark Templeton. So thanks so much, Mark, for taking the time today.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Brian, and good to see you here in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the weather now is very much nicer here than it is up in Washington. So
this is the time of year everyone loves to visit Citrix in Florida.
And I just had a great lunch with a bunch of the product management folks talking about the hurricanes and hurricane preparations and all that kind of stuff. So I feel like I'm ready to be here, you know, if I need to come down for any length of time.
Well, unfortunately, we've become experts in hurricane preparation and hurricane operations.
Project Kent, right?
So exactly. It's been the inspiration for the fundamentals of Project Kent.
And I want to talk about that, but let's take a step back. You've been at Citrix now for 12 years.
Almost 12 years.
And you've been performing, dancing on stage at iForum for 6-7 years, you know?
Well, at least. I've always considered myself CEO, even though I joined as head of marketing. CEO, I mean chief excitement officer. You know.
That's an office space title, I think, if ever. So yeah, because people want to know. So is that natural talent, or do you have to practice for the dancing?
No practice required, because it's really not relevant from a strategy point of view, other than to, you know, to express, to obviously make the company exciting, and to express, I think, the personality of Citrix. Around being a company that we don't take ourselves too seriously. We have our feet on the ground, and we are proud of the culture that we've built here around openness, transparency, and really being focused on innovation, technology, and making customers successful. So, you know, anything, I'll do anything, dancing, riding, you know, ponies, et cetera, on stage to forward the cause of Citrix and our technical teams and the customers that rely on us.
To that end, I think, I guess from my perspective, it seems like a lot is changing really with Citrix in terms of culture. Maybe from a Citrite standpoint, I think, well, we were definitely open all along anyway. But I mean, definitely now we have things like the blogs on CitrixCommunity.com. And I don't know what kind of research you're viewing, but I know I'm a fan of the blogs and just some great stories and that kind of stuff. CTP programs, so lots of things. Yeah. Not that Citrix really engaging with the community.
Yeah, I think, you know, I try to, you know, lead by example and by principle. And when I think about your question, I think of it this way. You know, we're 17 years old this year, right? So we're kind of an adolescent. And if you remember being like 17, maybe coming through 14, 15, 16, 17, you go through a few years where you kind of stay in your bedroom. You're trying to figure out who you are. You're probably not talking to your parents very much. You're probably not very transparent, as a matter of fact, because you're trying to sort out a lot of things. And then once you begin to sort them out, by the way, you never have them sort out in your life. You just get more, you know, sort of confident in your ability to deal with change. But then you're ready to start, you know, being much more transparent and open. And I think that, you know, your friends help you, you know, achieve that. And certainly the CTP group, yourself, and the kind of work you've done with BrianMadden.com have all really been inspirations to kind of push us back out. And it's like, hey, you know, we've got a lot to say, especially along technical and innovation fronts. And I think we've sorted a lot of things out in the last few years. So I think your question is insightful, and I think that's sort of what's underneath it in terms of why it seems like we're changing. But in terms of internally, you know, the company, I think, has just nurtured a culture here around respect for individuals, high integrity, and being open and honest. And, you know, when I'll be the first, and there are many here that will be the first to say, hey, I made a mistake. I was wrong. You know, so you know what we're going to do? Fix it.
As Citrix has been kind of coming out of adolescence, you talk about kind of personality and openness and that kind of stuff. But of course, in terms of product maturity and company maturity, that's certainly happening too. And this is your conversations have been having with everyone for the past couple of years. But clearly, Citrix moving beyond the niche server-based computing industry and into the more general kind of application delivery space.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's sort of part of what we've been sorting out in our bedroom for the past few years. And thinking about what we want to be when we grow up and the identity that we want to have. And so you've exactly stated it and captured it. And I know it's the way you guys that have been, you know, very much on the outside, you know, looking in with a critical eye have seen us. And it's maybe taken us a little longer to kind of come out of that shell and agree with you. So I think the other thing that's happening is, we talk to customers and channel partners, et cetera, those who really, write our payroll checks every couple of weeks, that the timing on that sort of message is really, really good and will bode well for the company over the next 5 and 10 years because it's relevant. You know, when you say something that's relevant, people pay attention, you know, and what makes something relevant is, gee, that's an important idea because it relates to an important set of problems I perceive that I have. And I think that more and more customers are telling us that and agreeing with us that companies that have a core and strategic ability to deliver applications anywhere they need to be delivered to will actually have a competitive advantage and be in the winner's circle and the winner's list from a business point of view. Especially when you think of the sort of very simple idea that, you know, 15 years ago, applications and users were typically in the same building. Being remote was almost an exception. And obviously that's how Citrix was born, on those exceptions, you know, sort of using dial-up to get work done, you know, when you were remote from the application. But now as applications and users have gotten further and further and further apart, and they're getting further apart, you know, going into the future. Applications are going to SOA, and users are going global. You know, I mean, now we have to serve people who are working in India, China, you know, outside the walls of the enterprise. I think that the relevance of Citrix is growing rapidly, and the message around application delivery is resonating and more relevant, you know, than we've ever been.
And so, of course, the message of application delivery, as you said, focusing on applications themselves, really, as opposed to the actual technologies that deliver them. And I think you've said before that this kind of gets back to that whole infrastructure component. And I don't mean the Citrix branded access infrastructure stuff necessarily, right, but rather that you know, Citrix is sort of an application business layer providing the infrastructure that people need to get their applications.
Yep.
And so that has been that way for a long time with Presentation Server, but now Citrix has things like Project Trinity and Project Tarpon to really look at sort of regardless of the, I guess, use case that Citrix wants to be able to provide the application. I guess in this case we're looking at Windows applications to the users.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the easiest way to kind of explain, you know, and even predict the course of the company is along the lines of, so as applications and users get separated from each other and further and further and further, the opportunity for us to follow the applications where they go and follow the users where they go becomes more and more of a requirement from a customer, you know, solution perspective and technology perspective, but also business opportunity. So that's why, you know, as applications have continued to move more and more to a web architecture, you know, we've had to follow the architectures that way. And that really accounts for the Netscaler acquisition in a huge way, and why we were willing to put down $330 million, the largest acquisition that we've done. When you think about where users are going, branch offices, all right, and the importance of the branch office in the future will become greater and greater. Why? Because, you know, highways are congested. Larger companies are worried about terrorism. and the work style.
The federal government, 10% mandated teleworker program, things
absolutely,
like that.
Absolutely, all of those things. So we've got to follow the users to branch offices and even to their homes. And that really, you know, so our Orbital Data acquisition, our WANscaler product, very important, following users. Also following users to sort of global locations as outsourcing agents, China, India, the Caribbean, doing software development, doing, you know, all kinds of tasks where organizations need to provide a desktop, but they need to have the security and ownership of the intellectual property that gets created and is accessed. So the whole notion of Trinity and being able to deliver a desktop that has, you know, the full set of capabilities that a local desktop would have, it becomes more and more strategically important. But again, it's all about following the users where they're going and staying pragmatic about that. And then, of course, for IT organizations to make sure that the technologies are there to operationalize that application delivery so that, you know, they can promise the right service levels, people can enjoy the performance that they need, they can promise security of information the way it needs to be promised, and obviously the cost models are managed in appropriate ways.
Well, and that really, I guess, gets to the heart of, as your platform is expanding beyond pure server-based computing and into these streaming and desktop, and providing desktops, whether it's a virtualized or bladed or whatever, is that sort of the it's growing more, as you say, to operationalize that. Now, this is interesting because, of course, I think the reality is that we live in a Windows world, a Windows application world.
Yes.
And definitely, you know, there's web applications and there's certain ones that are provided in the ASP models like Salesforce and that kind of stuff. But most of today's corporate apps are Windows-based apps, which I think is where Citrix has traditionally played very well. But, of course, all these Windows apps are riding on top of the Microsoft operating system and Microsoft's platforms and Microsoft's own efforts towards delivering applications. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about your relationship with Microsoft and kind of how that's evolved and continuing to evolve.
Sure. First, you know, Windows and the relevance of Windows, we believe, will continue to be profound over the next 10 years, okay? That much of the change that we see, or, you know, kind of vulnerability, if you will, of Windows are in places where Windows hasn't been actually very strong, and that's at the logic and data tier, which is sort of opportunity space for Microsoft. So the user tier of computing is very much a Windows world, and rich applications, you know, have long been the, you know, sort of hallmark of what Windows is great at doing, at delivering. So that really accounts for, you know, our closeness to Microsoft, and including all the history between Citrix and Microsoft, with Microsoft as an original investor in the company, holding a board of directors seat through about 1996 or 7, somewhere in there, and the importance of our nurturing that relationship with Microsoft going forward. A couple of really good things have happened. So our strategy with Microsoft that's been very successful, and we openly stated to them, okay, is that we have strategic alignment and tactical alignment. So tactical alignment is supporting their business cause, which is about revenue generation and, you know, all of the things that businesses have to do. And that means adding value to the platforms, so the Windows platform, and letting them monetize Windows and let customers sort of see the value in what we provide and choose to pay us or not. And that's worked extremely well. And I think the stats are still pretty much for every dollar of Citrix licensing that is sold in any given year, 75 cents of licensing is required from Microsoft. So that's that tactical alignment with them that, you know, keeps lots of sort of day-to-day people supporting Citrix and talking about Citrix and our value add. The strategic alignment gets at supporting the direction of Microsoft with their operating systems and their apps in the end. And in most cases, it's about not crossing their strategic bow. And that means, you know, when they're promoting
migration to Vista, migration to Office 2007, migration to Longhorn Server, that we're one of their partners that are helping customers get there in a lower cost and easier way. And I think we've successfully done that across generations of the desktop, the server, and their Office apps. And you know what? I think the third piece of the relationship, so tactical and strategic, and then all of that we keep straight with a broad set of relationships, and I'm talking about people to people, you know, and whether it's at the executive level high up in the company or, you know, with developers and engineers, you know, that have beers with our guys in Redmond and everyone in between in the field and in Redmond. You know, I think we've done a really good job of just keeping up those personal relationships and the friendships that we have with Microsoft. So I think that's that really is the essence of it. And then there's sort of one major don't, okay? And I think in history it's been proven every company that's ever challenged Microsoft to a technology race loses, okay? Unless they, you know, kind of start in a different space and a different technology platform, you know, and the race isn't over yet with some of those, like on the internet, Google, et cetera. So I think we've never done that, all right? And we have no intention to do that because no one wins in a technology race per se. It's only what technology can do in the support of making work easier and better and enabling companies to do, you know, business and work in new and different ways. You know, that's the win.
And so as Citrix has sort of grown the product portfolio, that's created more relationships with different groups inside Microsoft. So I think traditionally, Citrix and Microsoft have kind of been in lockstep with the same message where let's take presentation server and terminal services. If you have a lower complexity environment, you use pure terminal services. But if you have a higher complexity environment, then you want to add Citrix presentation server on top of that. Now, of course, if you look at something like where Citrix is entering into the streaming space, and with Microsoft's acquisition of Softricity, the messaging is almost opposite, where a Tarpon can sort of deliver the lower complexity environments, but for the higher complexity, then you want, or maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, you want something like a Softricity solution from Microsoft. So how does that relationship change and evolve as you're now, it's not just Citrix adds value on top of Microsoft in one area, because now Citrix got, you know, a more broad portfolio, and yeah. So now there's many different sort of verticals in there.
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I think that a couple of points here. The first one is, as companies like Citrix get larger, relationships get more complex with partners by definition, not only Microsoft. And there will be places where there's some co-opetition. So that's part of the reality of it. I think the second piece is we don't really, you know, but we don't consider Microsoft a competitor, which is a different sort of notion, right? Where you choose to compete with someone and you build a product and technology to compete. So that is not our purpose here. Our purpose is in completeness of solution, because remember, our view of the world is around application delivery, any app, any over any network to any device. And so we're filling in the technical platform that's required to make that claim and deliver on it. To us, it's a big deal. To Microsoft, it's important, but it's a feature of making Windows more enterprise ready and more prolific. And so they have a different purpose. And so where, you know, a customer is taking very much an app delivery, reading across the stack is the way I like to think of it, view, and they're more complex by definition, then I think that we've got a complete end-to-end solution for them. To the degree that they're thinking of more component parts and reading up and down the stack, then I think they'll choose Microsoft for example, streaming. But in either case, they'll get a solution, and in either case, Citrix will be supportive of the technology and integrate with it. And I think that's kind of a key thing, because customers don't want to see vendors fighting. I mean, where especially across components that need to necessarily connect to each other. So I think that's the reality of working with Microsoft. But I think, and then if you have more cases of overlap than you have of complementing, then you become more and more declared as a competitor and crossing the strategic bow. but I think we're nowhere near that. If you look at our Evergreen project, where we're building these branch office solutions in conjunction with Microsoft, some other things in the joint collaboration agreement, I think there's way more opportunity to complement them than there is to be in coopetition.
And you mentioned a couple times about creating the almost an application platform or the application infrastructure, whatever sort of phrase you want to use for that. And I think a lot of people industry-wide are starting to get that it's more than just server-based computing. It is about, I've got a bucket of users and a bucket of applications. How do I hook them together regardless of the technology? And we just want to be almost underlying plumbing, I think maybe you said also. There's other companies that want to do that kind of stuff too, like a Cisco almost, where 5 years ago, Cisco and Citrix in the same sentence, apart from they sound kind of the same, wouldn't have been an issue. But now, if you look at what Cisco is doing with their sort of application-based networking and that focus, they're looking at applications from the network stack, kind of crawling up into the application layer. You're sort of starting from the Windows application layer and going down into the network. Can you talk about that interplay a little bit and what your thoughts are there?
Absolutely. I think the same phenomenon is happening in the systems management and security spaces as well. So competition is good, keeps everyone on their toes, and gives customers some choices that they can make. We are seeing, whether it's Cisco or Juniper or Checkpoint or some of the systems management guys that have been either siloed or down in lower layers, sort of layer 1 through 3, looking for new growth and trying to deal with their own problems of commoditization of the historical businesses. And we all know that, like a layer 1 through 3 switches and routers.
I bought a 48-port Dell gig switch for $200.
Sure.
So layer 2 switch, right?
How do you build a strategic business on that going forward? So going up the stack is a very natural sort of process of evolution of companies like that. So it's the reality of what we're working with. And so from a game plan perspective, we have an advantage over any individual company, whether it's no matter how big they are, all right, and that they're reading up and down the stack, all right, from a networking, systems management, or a security perspective, and we're reading across the stack, which is our big advantage on an end-to-end basis, connecting up to any app, connecting up to any device. So that's one key point. Second is, we believe that the higher layers, the noted layer 4 through 7 part of the stack, are really application software layers and not rewarded by hardware prowess. And I think we all in the industry understand that everyone has got their own sort of intellectual limits. Some are intellectually limited around hardware, and crossing the software boundary is very difficult. And the same thing goes for software, moving to hardware. There are a lot of other boundary conditions that are like that. And so our advantage is that, we're a software company working, in the what we believe are, software layers of the stack, competing with, and we're working on an end-to-end basis, and we're competing with companies that are typically hardware companies working, in one segment of the stack, trying to come from the bottom up. So we'll compete, all right? We'll, I think, be, very successful in that competition. And at the same time, we have to realize that Cisco, good example, gets almost without respect to the quality of their product, 25 to 35% market share just by definition, and that'll be okay. And we'll have to integrate and work with Cisco as well as compete with them.
A couple of specific projects. We talked earlier, I think it was right here, about Project Kent and sort of a disaster recovery solution, access to applications that way. I wonder if you can talk about that. Because Project Kent, from a lot of people that have read about it, it's one of those things that's kind of, from the geek factor, kind of cool. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about Project Kent and the initiatives there.
Yeah, it is a fascinating project. So how did it start? It started by giving a new mission to Murali Thirumali's team and the team that's now known as the Citrix Advanced Solutions Group. So we gave Merle and his team a new mission, and the mission was basically, you now have access to all Citrix technologies. And what we want you to do is use the technologies and build an end-to-end solution for a particular hard business problem that our customers face. So after studying it for a while, they said, we're going to build a workforce continuity problem because we believe that customers are particularly worried about workforce disruptions, especially the specter of a pandemic, okay, and the realities of hurricanes, earthquakes, tsunamis, the things that we've seen recently, and obviously the unfortunate specter of terrorism. So that was how it began. And they looked at sort of some of the core technologies we had in communications, certainly through our VoIP technology that those guys actually very, very intimate with. Our online services, you know, the GoToMyPC, obviously presentation server. And so they looked at all those technologies, and they looked at something that was unique to Citrix as a company, and that is the experience that we've had in a firsthand basis in a workforce continuity event called hurricanes, and learned that the solution needed to be beyond just being able to, you know, access apps in the event of an emergency, of a disruption event. And so what we were able to, you know, do is bring together what we learned, and here's what we learned. That I think all of us that studied, whether high school or college, psychology human studies, we learned about Maslow and Maslow's hierarchy. And we learned that, you know, you can't possibly get to self-actualization unless you're physiologically safe. You know, you feel and that's food, water, shelter, et cetera. So we noticed that the same principles are at work during a disruption event. And so waking up on in the middle of the night and there's a hurricane coming through, you're not thinking about, I can't do my email. No, you're thinking about the safety of yourself and your family and your colleagues at Citrix. And so from what we learn there is that as you then wake up the next day, it's a mess, there's no power, maybe even the telephones are off. There are certain things that have to happen before you actually then have some interest in connecting up and doing some work. So that was really the inspiration for Kent, which is built on that whole Maslow's hierarchy that starts with, first of all, answering the first question after, you know, the sun comes up. Is everyone okay? All right. And so the technology has this ability to let everyone know who's okay, who's not okay, who's not accounted for, and deal with that. And then the second question, how do I get in touch with you? Okay, it answers that question. Then what can I do to help you? It answers that question.
And this is some basic things where the user standpoint, the user hits a website and just types in, I'm with Cousin Eddie.
That's right, and here's my phone number, yeah. Okay? Or I'm, you know, at a neighbor's home, and you know, and here's the number there. And then I hit a website and say, gee, I need water. I need a generator. I need blankets. I need whatever. Okay. So there's that whole, you know, capability of Kent, including, you know, doing a mashup with Google Maps, et cetera. It's pretty awesome so that you can see what's available to you in terms of help and, you know, what's closest. And then finally, of course, when you get sort of that, all of those questions answered and you feel sort of stable individually and as a family, then you can begin to then get access, you know, to your PC or to your apps. When Wilma came through here it's a little over a year ago now. I mean, this building was shut for 2 weeks. I mean, we never experienced that, you know, before. You know, from a business point of view, we kept the business running. There was no sort of external sort of impact to the business because, you know, we use our own technologies extensively. And so what we learned in that process has been transferred onto Kent and the technical platform that it's built on. And I hope you'll get a chance to visit the team there and do a whole podcast on Kent and the technology there. We have a great head of development there now that has tremendous experience. It'd be fascinating for you.
Well, I'll take this moment to kind of do a plug. So I've been here for 2 days now in Fort Lauderdale talking to maybe 7 or 8 different podcasts. And in general, the podcasts have been very popular, but I've asked the community to share their ideas with what they want to talk about in the podcast and who within the community and within Citrix they would like to talk to. And we definitely want to make this more of a regular thing and just go out there and just talk to different interesting people and do video tours and podcast tours. And there's just a lot of really interesting people doing a lot of really interesting things. So the more that we can share, I think the better for everyone.
Agree. And I think this medium of communication, I find it to be one of my favorites because I can take it with me. And when I'm traveling, you know, I can listen, you know, and on my time. And it's better than live, actually. So really happy to be, you know, contributing to the cause.
Yeah, well, definitely thank you, and thank you for your time. And I got to ask you, there's, you know, I've been coming down here to Citrix for, I don't know, 5 odd years now, and I always hear about Mark Templeton. He's got servers in his basement, and he's got racks down there, and all his gadgets and all this kind of stuff. So Dish, man, what's the deal?
Well, man, you know, yes, I actually consider myself a geek, all right? Maybe that'll be the subject of another podcast, because there are some actually interesting and funny stories that I could tell. But yeah, you know, here's how I'll answer your question. I've been in the industry a long time. I've heard lots of vendors make promises that have turned out to be BS. So I decided a long time ago that in order for me to decide whether something's BS or not, I need to try it myself. Okay, and so I'm always the first kid on my block to have a new gadget, whether it was WAP phones or a Linux desktop or now recently a PS3 or a Wii. So things of all dimensions that really get at what the future will look like. Okay, I want to be the first to experience it. I think it's a part of my job, and secondly, it's, you know, my DNA and my nature as a geek. So. That's,
so
that's why.
You have a Slashdot account we can all add you as our friend?
You know, I need to set one up, but maybe I can give you a little tour of my data center at home at some time.
Oh,
so
yeah, that'd be great.
I probably have about, let's see, conservatively 12 servers, what we'd consider to be servers, okay? And maybe at least that many, maybe more desktops. And even more things that would be called, you know, endpoints, you know, sort of CE devices, et cetera. So yeah, I have a huge standby power utility bill.
Maybe we'll. I'm looking over at your desk. I'm counting 3 keyboards now. Maybe we'll talk Mark and let us shoot some photos of him with all his keyboards on his desk right now. But well, again, thank you for the time. The one more question I have to ask, or I'm going to get stoned before I get home. I mean, throwing rocks at me. I switched to Mac, so now I'm a Mac fanboy. I make no excuses, and so I'll just remind you that there are Citrix communities that love the Mac. I'm working on an article about my Mac experience from Citrix, so that we've got the ICA client, the Firefox browser extension for PN Agent works on Mac, and all this kind of stuff. So still waiting for that Citrix Access Gateway Mac client, but
it's coming.
That's great to hear. So
it's coming. We'll do a lot more on Macintosh. You know, I have as many Macintoshes at home as I do PCs, okay, Windows machines, and I have quite a few virtual Windows machines these days as the Macintosh has gone Intel. So, yeah, you'll see a lot more on that front, because I think customers are actually getting more choices there. And secondly, I'm a big believer in the employee-owned PC. And I think that we're probably technologically 3 years away from making that a true reality, because there are a lot of issues, all right? And we're probably 5 to 8 years away from the sociological changes that have to take place to enable that. So another topic that would be a fun one to talk about, you know, at a future time with you.
Let's do it.
Okay.
All right. Again, Mark, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, Brian.
Today's show is copyright 2007 by the Brian Madden Company. Thanks to Mark Templeton for taking the time to talk. And as always, thank you for listening.